Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
Welcome to Wordles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to break down one of the latest breakout candidates in the Orioles farm system, and that is Mac Horvath, who is having a really good start to June. And then we're going to get into park effects a little bit, talking about some recent findings published by Baseball America. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. Well, now talk about Mac Horvath, who has overcome a slow start to the season to have a scorching month of June. With Sunday's game included, Horvath is hitting .319 with a .385 on base percentage and a .638 slugging percentage to go with three home runs. Along the way, Horvath, even amid his slow start, maintained very good strikeout to walk numbers. So we were hopeful that a breakout was coming, and it seems that is the case now with Horvath. Even while the overall stat line doesn't look great, you dig deeper and you realize that he's overcome a slow start to put together a solid season to this point. And we're now wondering, after seeing Connor Norby and Colton Cowser overcome slow starts at Aberdeen 2 years ago, and Dylan Beaver overcome a similar slow stretch last year, is Mac Horvath the breakout player of the second half in 2024? Bob, you had a chance to catch the Iron Birds over the weekend. You were on the air. So first off, tell us about that experience, but then tell us what you saw of Mac Horvath.
Oh, that was so much fun to be able to do that. And thank you to Michael Marcantonini, sorry for butchering your last name. I know it's a mouthful. My last name is not easy to say either if you just read it. That Mac Horvath didn't really do anything of note Saturday night when I went, but it was a really cool experience. I'll talk about some thoughts on the starting pitcher later on from that game. Great angle, great view, I'll tell you that. And to be able to look to my right, oh, here's the TV screen monitor. It was nice. And I would go back anytime to do it again. Recommend anyone out there do it if you get the chance. I don't know how that will come about, but definitely was good. And Mac Horvath, you know, the thing to keep in mind is, and I noticed this when I was looking at Enrique Bradfield's numbers Saturday night, he had a 720 OPS going into Saturday's game, which was still a like 104 WRC plus. And Horvath, even after a slowish weekend, despite, you know, being hot of late, batting .230 with the 741 OPS on the season, that's still a 107 WRC plus. That's still 7% better than league average. So you have to keep league context into account when you're looking at these guys. And I think he's put his troubles in the rearview mirror, like you said. The walk rate's still really solid, 11.3%. Strikeout rate is only 20.8%, which is 5-6% lower than it was last year in a great season that he had. You know, BABIP's a little bit low. ISO, we know he's got more in a tank. So, I mean, this is a guy that could play second base, third base, corner outfield. I'm still super high on Mac Horvath.
Yeah, I didn't see any reason to be pessimistic about Horvath for any reason, or see any reason like to move him down in the rankings after the first 2 months of his first full pro season. in my opinion, it wouldn't matter if he waited until August to start hitting. I don't think my opinion was going to change just because, like, the power's there, the speed is there, the defense is there, defensive versatility is there. He plays multiple positions. I really noticed him playing third base a lot early on in the year. And when I would watch him, he played really good third base at the start of the year. The hit tool does have big question marks. It's what kept him at UNC for an additional year and bypassed the first year he was draft eligible. But like, his start in Aberdeen didn't really cause me to blink an eye. And as John Mioli pointed out, he's written about Horvath, I think a couple of times at Baseball America, and how Horvath loves being in the system and is thriving with the hitting drills that they're doing. And it seems like he is a really solid fit for this organization, like behind the scenes. And I think he deserves a pretty long runway. And I actually looked, I just used the past month. I know you can always like pick a random date and start looking at stats from there. Whatever helps your story, helps prove your point. But I just did the past month. And so from the start of the season through May 17th, we use the last month as a parameter here. Horvath was hitting just 196, but he had a 15% walk rate and 17% strikeout rate. And 9 of his 19 hits went for extra bases. So like, I look at his college resume, the draft capital, and I see those numbers, and I'm looking forward to a breakout. And in the 1 month since then, so since May 17th, he's hitting 267. The OPS is up to 823, and he has a 125 WRC+, which is up from 94 WRC+ he had the first 2.5 months of the year. He's walking less and striking out more, but he's hitting for much more power. And I think this breakout is sustainable. And I think just it matches what you watch. When you watched him on a near nightly basis down in Aberdeen, like, I saw a lot of great at bats. Maybe he was 0 for 4, but you know, we've had players on the show talk about, you know, the reports they get after the games and how many like at bats you won, how many times you barreled the ball, and they're all excited about, they want to be on the barrel leaderboard each night. And I feel like Horvath checked a lot of boxes most nights, even though he'd go 0 for 4 with like 2 strikeouts. I felt good about watching a lot of his at-bats. You could pick out one or two each game where you're like, he looked good there. The results just weren't there. He stuck to the course, and the results have been there. It's why I love watching minor league baseball every night, and why I love doing this, and why I think you miss out a lot when you just scout the stat line. And with Horvath, I think he's an example of missing a lot. I really do think he was, second-round draft pick? Like, drafted very early for many reasons, and I think this breakout is for real, and it's going to continue.
Honestly, I got to see him play at second base on Saturday. He looked pretty smooth out there. And I know Michael was telling me that he feels more comfortable at third base. I mean, there was a play where a ball deflected. He had to redirect and gather himself, make a strong throw. To me, he looked good at second base. Obviously, very short sample size, but I was happy with what I saw defensively.
Yeah, I think that Horvath has definitely been one of those players that you can't take the first couple months of this year and downgrade him. As we've done our monthly updates, I've kind of held steady. And part of it was that there were some glimmers in the stat line, even when he was struggling, that made me believe that he was going to bounce back. And the other thing is that this is just a really athletic player. Everything that Nick said about his ability to barrel the ball, I fully agree with. And his speed probably doesn't get talked about enough, because since he's come into the system, 70 games so far as a professional player, and this is as of Monday night, he's 33 for 34 in stolen base attempts, which includes a perfect 19 for 19 this year. And he kind of fits, you know, when we were talking about the draft class last year, in the aftermath of the Orioles focusing on speed, Enrique Bradfield Jr. was the biggest part of that conversation for obvious reasons, but Horvath is not too far behind Bradfield. Maybe he doesn't have that elite speed, but he's a good base runner who is good with stolen bases. So he's just a really good athlete who is probably still a little raw at this point, but he checks a lot of boxes. And at the rate he's going, he's going to turn 23 next month. Maybe he's in Bowie by the end of this year. I think there's going to be a lot to feel good about with his season when it's over.
Yeah, and it's why, like, we're not going to talk about the draft, but there's a lot of draft conversations obviously happening in Discord, a lot of mock drafts coming out. We're getting close. It's fun to think about. His teammate, his college teammate, Vance Honeycutt, hit tool is like 20, 30 grade hit tool. It's not that good. But he does a lot of other things very, very well. Matt Horvath is that type of player. The hit tool has question marks, but he does a lot of other things very, very well. Dillon Beavers type, you know, to bring it to an Orioles example, the Orioles drafted Dillon Beavers knowing that they're going to have to overhaul that swing and that hit tool. And I feel like that's the case with Horvath as well. But like, for this organization to feel comfortable enough to draft him where they did out of UNC when so many other teams bypassed him because of the hit tool, I feel pretty good about. And after watching him this year and seeing these numbers he's putting up, I feel pretty good about what we could eventually see from Horvath as like a utility type guy up at the major league level, especially as he continues to play more defensive positions.
Let's go now into park effects. Baseball America published this recently, and we always like to dig into this, which, first of all, they do wonderful work. Whether you're not a subscriber yet, you should be one. But it's always interesting because the park effects have a way of checking our assumptions. And some of the things that we learned this year, for instance, Aberdeen maybe not as pitcher-friendly as we always believe it is. Norfolk can be really tough on left-handed hitters. So, Nick, I know that you were excited when this came out and you were able to kind of pick it apart a little bit. What stood out to you?
A lot. It did confirm a lot of things that we always talk about. And something surprised me, though. My notes that I jotted down from this were that Norfolk is a very pitcher-friendly park. And like they included like park factors for like WOBA, hits, singles, BABIP. I think it was only like five or six categories. But like Norfolk's like middle of the pack in terms of like WOBA, weighted on base average. Seventh lowest in AAA with a 96 park factor, 100 being league average. It's like it's one of the worst in the International League for hitters in that metric. Righties, it's better, but for lefties, it's like near the bottom of the pack. Harbor Park is a tough place to hit for lefties. Again, righties a little bit better. Bowie, we knew that it's very kind to hitters. That is very true. Like 108 park factor for WOBA at or above 100 across the board. Lefties, a little bit more difficult, but pretty neutral across the board for lefties, righties. We knew hitters were going to thrive in Bowie. The bigger issue has been at Harbor Park because that wind in right field, you have the wind coming off the river. I've watched countless balls over the last 25 years going to games at Harbor Park. Balls just get caught up in that right field wind and just die. You think they're long gone and they fall 10 feet short of the warning track. These park factors kind of prove a lot of those assumptions, except I did not think Norfolk was going to be as pitcher friendly as it is. Aberdeen and Delmarva is where it gets fun. Aberdeen is actually pretty hitter friendly. It's tough for righties. It's got Aberdeen has a 110 park factor for singles, 106 for BABIP, 101 for WOBA. So hitter friendly. Lefties a little bit easier than righties. I'm not sure why that would be to be certain, but I think the effect at Aberdeen is bigger than the park factor. It's what we've talked about before. Like, it's guys in their first full year of pro ball. They're undergoing changes to their swing. They're having to swing in uncomfortable positions that they're not used to. They got to get used to that. Go back to Colton Cowser when it was in Aberdeen. He talked about sleep was an issue. Learning how to sleep as a pro baseball player was hard for him. I think it goes beyond park factors when you're at Aberdeen. And it's, you can't really just say, oh, Aberdeen is a tough place to play or to hit, because actually it's really not. I do think, based on some conversations we've had with players, that there are some other things, like there was the lighting issue, some batter's eye issues, I think, that maybe they could have fixed to help out, but it's not the park factor. And then Delmarva is brutal. Delmarva is one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in all of Low A. It's a park factor of 93 for hits, which was the second worst in Low A. It's slightly better for righties, but it is the worst park in Low A to hit at if you are a lefty. And there are a lot of those in Delmarva right now. So not only are you seeing a roster full of like 19-year-old international players making major life adjustments and learning probably more about life off the field than actually baseball on the field, like they're playing at one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in Low A. So like, give the kids a little bit of a break if they're struggling down there in Delmarva.
Aaron Estrada looking even more impressive after hearing that. I mean, Aberdeen, it does make a little bit of sense that it could be more hitter friendly than you would assume, just because it's a wide open gap to gap stadium. You know, there's a lot of room to hit a gap, get some hits to fall in, use your speed for some doubles and triples. But Yeah, especially for righties, unless you're going to crank it directly down the foul line, it's pretty tough. Yeah. Very interesting stuff. I always love seeing the park factors, and it's kind of strange to me and fascinating that they kind of slowly change over time, even with no changes to the park itself.
I guess Norfolk and Bowie are probably the least surprising for me, because we've known that Norfolk's reputation over the years skews pitcher friendly. And as we've heard before from guests on this show, that it's especially pitcher friendly in the early months of the year when the weather is cold. Nick mentioned the wind coming in off the river. Balls just really don't carry there like they do at other ballparks. Bowie, definitely hitter friendly. Delmarva is interesting, because I remember when I was covering low A, talking to players about Delmarva, and hitters would get frustrated because they felt like they had to get the ball perfectly down the line for it to get out. Because down the line, you kind of had a short porch, but then when you get into the power alleys, it is a little bit deeper. So it's not that's, I guess it's not surprising to me that it leans towards pitchers, but I was not expecting it to be as drastic as it is in some of the numbers that Nick mentioned.
Yeah. I just remember Gunner when he was down there in Delmarva, like that first week of the year, and he cranked a home run. I think it was like opposite field. It's like the left center field gap. And I can't remember who it was. Someone that was like, I have never seen anyone hit a home, any lefty hit a home run to that part of the ballpark ever. And Gunner hit it with ease. Little did we know that Gunnar Henderson would become the Gunnar Henderson that we now know. But yeah, I think, you know, take these for what they are. It's another piece of the puzzle. You know, it doesn't explain everything, but I do think that it is fun to look at and see, all right, when you get down there in Delmarva and understand that, like Bob mentioned, Aaron Estrada, Thomas Sosa, who's hitting well. Like if I'm seeing a 19-year-old kid hit the ball well and have immediate success down there in Delmarva, where it's harder to hit and more pitcher friendly, I'm taking more notice, right? And if, you know, righties or lefties are struggling in Norfolk, I'm going to take that with a slight grain of salt, especially if they have the resume behind it. There are many other factors you got to take into account there, but it is something fun to look at. And the biggest thing for me was Aberdeen, that it actually is pretty hitter friendly down there. And that what we've said for years is true. It's a lot more than that. There are some major changes happening to these guys at that high level. And so those guys who break out, like Matt Corvath we just talked about, those guys who truly break out and find their way up to Bowie pretty quickly, I think you got to pay attention, because those guys are legit and they're moving up quickly to Bowie for many reasons.
Absolutely. And with that,
ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5. Or with the breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Now we'll get into the final segment of our episode, where we shout out a player outside the top 30 portion of our top 50 list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good week, a good game, or maybe there's just something interesting in their stat line that we want to mention. And since Bob brought this up at the top of the show, I'll let him start this week with his pitcher.
Yeah. I want to say I have not been impressed with Levi Wells this season so far, to be honest. I haven't watched much of him. I have seen a little bit of him on MILB TV. Not too much. Stat lines, obviously, they don't look great, but he's legit. I've changed my mind. Seeing him live in person probably helps that he started off so strong Saturday night, but my goodness, touching 97 with the fastball, blowing hitters away. His line looks way worse than it should have at the end of the day. He retired the first eight batters, and then I think it was a walk to the ninth batter. Creed Willems throws a strike to second base on a stolen base attempt. It was clear as day he was out. The ball beat him there. Tag was there. Ump calls him safe. Next batter doubles. Batter after that homers. So, you know, that kind of screwed him up there. And I think there was also an error on Douglas Hodo the following inning where it was like right at him, but the sun was in his eyes, hit off his glove, went for a two-base error or something like that. It was just some sloppy umpire calls slash defense did not go his way, but man, his stuff looked crisp. Slider looked great. Fastball had hop, as you could say. The Orioles love it for a reason. Was just very impressed by Levi Wells. And honestly, the more I was looking into him, obviously the walks have to come down. That's for sure. But his ERA is 6.92. His xFIP is 4.04. He has a very high BABIP. It is 359, was the highest of all Ironbirds pitchers this year. His home run to fly ball ratio is 17.2%, which from research in the past, 8 to 12% is basically what it should be. It's not controlled by the pitcher, apparently, between BABIP and home run fly ball rate, the two things that the pitcher cannot control. Very unlucky. If you look at his numbers in Jackson Ballmeister, I don't know if they're that much different, honestly, when you really dig into it. So Levi Wells, I apologize for sleeping on you, and you're back on my radar in a big way.
So did you get to see the TrackMan stuff? Was that over there? Did you get some exit velo data for us?
Unfortunately did not. I asked Michael about that. I think might be on its way someday, but wasn't there yet. So, you know, missed out there, but that's okay. Next time I'm in Aberdeen, I'll just have to find some scouts or some like one time I just happened to sit behind someone that had their computer up and had all the StatCast data. That was a good find. I'm got to do that again. But I guess I'll go with my hitter from here. Jordan Sanchez, my guy, apparently, just because I keep bringing him up because we heard he signed for $500,000. And then it was just like, well, where is he? He didn't show up until this season in the FC or not even the FCL, DSL. What am I talking about? And I think safe to say he's better than the competition in the DSL. The numbers I'm about to read from Fangraphs do not include today's game where he was like 3 for 5 with a double and a triple. 168 WRC plus, 345 batting average, OPS over 1,000, ISO 241, walk rate 17%, strikeout rates 22.9%. Yeah, I think he's a guy to keep an eye on from here on out and wish he could get up to the FCL, maybe even Delmarva this year, but he'll probably just stay in the DSL like I talked about in the past for, well, I don't know. If he signed last year, maybe there is a chance of that. But I know they keep these guys in Dominican Summer League longer than they probably should a lot of times just for tax purposes. So we will see, but I'm excited about Jordan Sanchez.
Yeah, his box scores have been phenomenal to start the year. I'm going to go with Jake Cunningham. I think he took a pretty big dip on our top 50, and he saw the list and he was not happy. So but to be fair, he was probably the biggest disappointment to begin the year after a lot of hype initially. I was very high on him coming into the draft. I loved when he was actually the pick by the Orioles. I loved it even more when Brad Selick, still love you, Brad, even though you're in DC, rained praise on Cunningham afterwards, saying they felt like the Orioles felt like they got a lot of value on him when falling. Felt like he said the tool shed thing, and we took it and ran with it. But he labeled him the tool shed. But he was hurt his last year at Charlotte. He got hurt again right at the start of this season, his first full pro year. So, you know, I was like, he deserves a little bit longer runway. We'll see if he can turn it around. And this past week, he went 7 for 17. So a 4.12 average with a pair of doubles, 2 stolen bases, 3 walks and just 3 strikeouts. And he had the second most number of at-bats in Delmarva last week. So just the 3 strikeouts was nice to see. I'm not saying the breakout's here, but I hope this is a springboard type week for him. and we see more good weeks like this out of him over the next month or so. And my pitcher, I'm going, sticking with Delmarva, and Nestor Germán missed a month due to an unknown injury. Obviously, he's low A, so we don't know. But returned last week to Delmarva, where he had just a two-inning start, but he did not allow a hit. He walked one, and he struck out five. So he's pitched 26 innings this season, and that's after missing a month. Has a 1.37 ERA, 34 strikeouts, a 152 average against, and a whip under one. He didn't pitch last year after the Orioles drafted him in the 11th round out of Seattle. So smaller school guy. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know if you guys know any more about him, but I know, I don't know his velo. I don't know his pitch mix. He is the mystery man in this organization. He wasn't on Joe Doyle's top 600 draft prospect list last year. 600 names deep, Nestor Germán was not on that list. And Joe Doyle is a Washington guy. Joe Doyle does great work, but Washington prospects, West Coast prospects, like that's his territory. And he did not have Nestor Germán on that list. But I did find a tweet. We've shared it before, but I don't know who this guy is, but his resume looks pretty impressive. Like he knows what he's talking about. So I'm going to trust him. But he had a tweet of overall full arsenal stuff plus last year in the college ranks. So full arsenal stuff plus in college last year. Top 10 list. Number one on that list, Hurston Waldrop. Great guy. RIP, he's on the IL right now. But he was number one overall. Paul Skeens, number two. Decent pitcher. We'll see if he ever becomes anything. Brody Brecht was at number three. First round potential pick this year at Iowa. Number four was Nestor Germán. What the hell? And we like then it was Jamie Arnold out of FSU and then Chase Burns were five and six on that list. So like we need to get Nestor Germán on the show. John Mioli, write the Nestor Germán piece, please. Orioles PR, I know you're listening. Feed that name to Steve Molesky. Get him to interview Nestor Germán. We need more information about Nestor because yeah, he's pitching well. So
yeah, I love those picks just because I want Jay Cunningham to work the tool shed. He's gotta put the tools together. But yeah, Nestor Germán. Yeah, I just love this organization can take him in the 11th round, sign Trey Gibson, and we're like, I don't know. And then 2 months later, we're like, top 50 prospects, let's go with a bullet.
Absolutely. I'll go now to my guys, and I'll go with the hitter. And he makes this segment a lot because he's a guy who runs really hot and cold, and that's Elio Prado. And last week, he was really good. Six-game series against Hickory, goes 8-for-21 at the plate with two doubles, three walks to three strikeouts. That's good for a 381 stretch, 381 batting average during that stretch. Overall numbers for Prado this year, still not great, but at just 22 years old, he shows some real potential. And just like what Nick said about Cunningham, I hope that this week is a little bit of a springboard week for Prado because when he's on, he's one of the more intriguing prospects at that level. And then I'm going to go down to the DSL for my pitcher this week. Keylor Morphe had a very good start against DSL Rojos, the Reds affiliate. 3 1/3 scoreless innings on Saturday with three strikeouts, no walks, while scattering two hits. Morphe was signed out of Venezuela by the Orioles in last year's international free agent class and played in the DSL last year and struggled a little bit. But at just 17 years old, flash potential at times, back there this year at only 18. And so far through two outings, he's pitched 5 1/3 innings, seven strikeouts to just two walks, only two hits allowed in that span. So very, very small sample size. But so far, he's missing bats. The strikeouts are up. The walks are down. You have to like that trajectory for the young right-hander. Let's hope that keeps up.
Yeah, I was commenting on Prado. I like Prado a lot. He's got all the tools to be a five-tool guy. It kind of reminds me of Steven Acevedo, who is having a pretty good season so far. But just consistency. If he could be consistent, he'd be much higher on the list, obviously.
Absolutely. And that does it for this episode. We'll be back later this week to take questions from our listeners as part of our mailbag segment. In the meantime, you can find us on our multitude of social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also over at Substack, OrielesOnTheVerge.substack.com. And while you're browsing around the internet, head over to our Patreon community and become a member. You can sign up as a paying member for as little as $3 a month, and then at the $5 and $10 levels, have access to exclusive bonus daily coverage from Bob, Nick, and myself. And we're only a couple weeks out from our updated top 50 prospects list for the month of July. So you'll want to make sure that you're in there in time to hear that. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Sweden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.